Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Brian Lynn, Phil Deerking, and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, here is Brian Lynn.
Coco, the gorilla who became famous for learning sign language, has died in the United States. The California-based Gorilla Foundation that kept and studied Coco announced that she had passed away in her sleep on Tuesday. She was 46 years old. Coco was a western lowland gorilla born on July 4, 1971, at the San Francisco Zoo. The very next year, Coco began working with Dr. Francine Patterson, who taught her American Sign Language. Her keepers said Coco also understood some spoken English. The teaching experiment became part of a larger project at California's Stanford University in 1974. The Stanford project later expanded to include another western lowland gorilla named Michael, who also learned sign language. 5 years later, the Gorilla Foundation was created in the Santa Cruz Mountains, about 40 kilometers south of San Francisco. The two gorillas were moved there. Michael died in 2000. Coco appeared in many films and television documentaries. She appeared twice in the magazine National Geographic. Her 1978 cover showed a photograph Coco had taken of herself in a mirror. The second issue in 1985 included the story of Coco and her pet cat named All Ball. The story led to the popular book Coco's Kitten, which can be found in many schools worldwide. In 1998, Coco appeared on the internet in what researchers called the first interspecies chat. The gorilla used the event to communicate through an interpreter to directly answer questions from fans. Western lowland gorillas are threatened in their native environment of Central Africa. The Gorilla Foundation says it will continue to honor Coco by continuing to carry out ongoing projects. These include conservation efforts in Africa and expanding the Maui Great Ape Sanctuary in Hawaii. I'm Brian Lynn.
China and the Philippines are discussing a joint fishing agreement they hope will ease a long-time sea territory dispute. Philippine media said that the talks began after Chinese President Xi Jinping and Philippine President Rodrigo Duterte met in April. Fabrizio Bozzato is with the Taiwan Strategy Research Association in Taipei. He said if the agreement is reached, signed, and put into effect, it would represent a significant step forward in the relations between the two countries.
Sharing resources is not a light matter, light issue.
The Philippine government has often disputed China's use of the South China Sea within the Philippine Exclusive Economic Zone, or EEZ. This includes movement of Chinese fishing, Coast Guard, and Navy ships. But in 2016, the country's two leaders met to build a stronger relationship. China agreed to invest $24 billion in development aid to the Philippines. The relationship-building effort has eased tensions over their South China Sea dispute. China uses historical maps to claim about 90% of the sea. However, Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam also claim control of parts of that 90%. Between 2012 and 2016, tensions rose between the Philippines and China over the fishing-rich area of the Scarborough Shoal. Over time, the more powerful China took control. Duterte visited China in October of 2016 to negotiate a solution. Soon after, China's Xinhua news agency reported that Xi had called for stronger bilateral cooperation in fisheries and other areas. However, experts say there are limits to what kind of deal is possible. J. Betong Bacal is a professor at the University of the Philippines. He said the Philippines faces legal limits in making agreements. Antonio Contreras, a political scientist at De La Salle University in the Philippines, agrees.
If it is within our EEC, it should not be a fishing agreement. It should be a fishing permit. It's not an agreement between equals, but it's more like I'm giving you permission to fish under my terms.
An official agreement might clearly identify where each country could fish, including rights of entry in disputed waters to both. But Betong Bacal said tensions could rise again at any point without such agreement. The Philippines signed a fisheries-related law enforcement agreement with Taiwan in 2015. Vietnam and Malaysia were working on a fishery deal last year. In 2016, the World Court ruled in favor of the Philippines over South China Sea territorial claims. China rejected the ruling, but has since sought peace with other claimants through agreements and economic aid. I'm Phil Dierking.
When you woke up this morning, you probably did at least five things before you left your home for school or work. Maybe you ate breakfast, took a shower, brushed your teeth, put on your clothes, and looked at the news or internet. For each thing you did something else before, during, or after those other things. For example,
before I ate breakfast, I did 20 minutes of yoga.
Before I ate breakfast is an adverb clause. In an earlier program, we told you about adverb clauses. Today, we will show you how to shorten these clauses. Shortened adverb clauses often sound more natural and concise in English. We call the shortened clauses modifying adverbial phrases. But that name is needlessly complex for a grammar structure that is often easy for many English learners. Listen to the example again.
Before I ate breakfast, I did 20 minutes of yoga.
Here is how we shorten it.
Before eating breakfast, I did 20 minutes of yoga.
Two things are different. We removed the subject I and changed ate to the ing form, eating. Notice that we only reduced the adverb clause, not the main clause. The main clause, I did 20 minutes of yoga, stays the same. And here's something you may recall from an earlier program. An adverb clause or phrase need not appear before the main clause of a sentence. That means, I did 20 minutes of yoga before eating breakfast has the same meaning as, before eating breakfast, I did 20 minutes of yoga. There are three types of adverb clauses that can be reduced: time, cause and effect, and contrast. Not all time clauses can be reduced. They must begin with certain time words, like before, after, while, when, since, or as soon as. Okay, now test your knowledge on our next example using while. Listen.
While I was listening to the news, I made a cup of tea.
How can we reduce this clause? Here's how.
While listening to the news, I made a cup of tea.
So, what's different? Again, we removed the subject. And this example contains was, so we removed it also. In modifying adverbial phrases, we omit forms of be. The verb listen is already in ing form, so we did not change it. Sometimes we can even remove the word while in a time clause and still express its meaning, which is during the same time. Listen.
Listening to the news, I made a cup of tea.
This option is, however, less common except in some forms of writing. Next up are cause and effect adverb clauses. These clauses begin with words like because or since and express the cause or reason for something. The main clause gives the result. Here's an example.
Because she needed to study for the exam, she stayed at the library.
To reduce this, we remove the cause word because. And again, we remove the subject, she, and we change the verb needed to the ing form, needing.
Needing to study for the exam, she stayed at the library.
But what if the cause and effect clause contains the present perfect verb tense? Listen to an example.
Because he had been to that museum before, he didn't want to go again.
And here's how we reduce it.
Having been to that museum before, he didn't want to go again.
We removed the word because and the subject he. And we changed the present perfect had been to having been. Finally, we have contrast clauses. These clauses begin with words like though, although, and despite. They express an unexpected result between information in the adverb clause and main clause. Here's an example.
Though he was tired, Joe gave us a ride to the game.
And when we reduce it,
though tired, Joe gave us a ride to the game.
Did you notice what changed? For contrast clauses, we keep the contrast word, in this case, though. But again, we remove the subject, and we remove was, a form of be. So, how can the meaning of a sentence be clear if we remove the subject from the adverb clause? Because the subject of the adverb clause and the subject of the main clause are the same. If the subjects are different, the adverb clause cannot be reduced. Just for fun, listen to an example of such.
While I was biking to work, a squirrel jumped into the street.
The subject of the adverb clause is I, and the subject of the main clause is squirrel. and it reduces to this.
While biking to work, a squirrel jumped into the street.
But that is silly. Squirrels do not ride bikes or have jobs. Well, that's all the time we have today. Having read this story, do you want to try reducing adverb clauses? We hope so. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The stock market crash of 1929 began a long and difficult period for the United States. President Herbert Hoover struggled to find solutions as the nation sank into the worst economic crisis in its history. But the Great Depression was not the only problem demanding answers from Hoover. The president also had to deal with a number of foreign policy issues. I'm Mario Ritter. With Chris Cruz, we look at how the Great Depression affected relations between the United States and other countries.
My mother told me, before she passed away, said, son, when I'm gone, don't forget to pray, 'cause there'll be hard times, hard times. Oh yeah, yeah. Who knows better than I?
There were revolutions in South America. Japan launched a campaign of aggression in northeastern China, and the economic situation in America created serious problems in relations with Europe. Hoover succeeded in some areas of his foreign policy, but he failed to solve America's economic troubles. And, like most Americans, he failed to recognize the importance of political changes taking place in Japan and Germany.
Herbert Hoover's foreign policy was marked by his desire to make friends and avoid war. Like most Americans, the new president had been shocked by World War I. Hoover had seen the results of that terrible war with his own eyes. He led the international effort to feed the many European victims of the fighting. The new president was also a Quaker, a member of the Religious Society of Friends. Quakers oppose war. Hoover shared the wish of most Americans that the world would never again fight a major war. To him, the bloody bodies at Verdun, the Marne, and the other battlefields of World War I showed the need to seek peace through negotiations.
Hoover worked toward this goal even before he entered the White House. Following his election, he had several months before becoming president. Hoover used this time to travel to Latin America for 10 weeks. He wanted to show Latin American nations that they could trust the United States to honor their rights as independent nations. Hoover kept his word. The year after he took office, his administration announced that it would recognize the governments of all Latin American countries, including governments that the United States did not like. Hoover told the American people that he would not follow the Latin American policies of President Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy Roosevelt decided in 1904 that the United States had a right to intervene in Latin America if it disagreed with the actions of governments there. Hoover said this was wrong. He told the country that it was more important to use friendship than to use force.
Hoover withdrew American forces from Nicaragua. He also arranged to withdraw them from Haiti. And he showed restraint as some 50 revolutions shook the nations of Latin America. Some revolutionary governments opposed the United States. They refused to pay debts to American companies, or they claimed ownership of foreign property. But Hoover refused to advance American interests by force. He wanted to prove that the United States could treat Latin American nations as equals. That policy was quite successful. Relations between the United States and Latin American countries generally improved under Herbert Hoover's leadership.
The situation in Europe was much more difficult and much more serious for the United States. The problem was simple: money. The Great Depression did not stop at America's borders. It moved to Britain, Europe, and beyond. And it brought extremely hard economic conditions. In Germany, the value of the national currency collapsed. Inflation forced people to buy goods with hundreds, thousands, even millions of German marks. They lost faith in the system, and they looked for some new leader to provide solutions. The economic crisis also put great pressure on the international circle of debt that had been created after the war. Suddenly, American bankers could no longer make loans to Germany. This meant that Germany could not pay back war debts to France and the other Allied nations in the War to End All Wars. And without this money, the Allied nations could not repay money that they owed American banks. The circle of debt fell apart.
Why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, I made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime?
The situation grew worse and worse throughout the early months of 1930. Hoover finally had to announce that all nations could delay their debt payments to the United States for 1 year. Hoover's actions did what he wanted it to. It put a temporary stop to the international debt crisis. But it caused great damage to private banks. People lost faith in the banking system. Throughout Europe, people withdrew their money from banks. As a result, the European banks could not repay more than $1 billion that they had borrowed from private American banks.
This was not the only problem. Nations throughout Europe were also forced to take their currencies off the gold standard. This meant their money no longer could be exchanged for gold. The economic situation grew worse, and as it did, serious political tensions began to threaten peace in Asia and Europe.
The threat in Asia became clear first. Japan had defeated Russia in a war in 1905. This victory gave Japan control over the economy of the southern part of what was then called Manchuria in northeastern China. As years passed, Japan began to feel threatened by two forces. First, Chinese leader Chiang Kai-shek was trying to organize all of China under the control of his nationalist forces. Second, Russia was extending the Chinese Eastern Railway to the Russian port city of Vladivostok. Japan's army took control of the government in Tokyo in late 1931. The army was fearful of the growing threat to Japan's control of Manchuria, so it moved Japanese troops immediately into several Manchurian cities, and it claimed political control of the whole area. President Hoover and most Americans strongly opposed Japan's aggression, but they were not willing to take any action that might lead to another world war.
Japan's military leaders knew that the people of Europe and America had no desire to fight to protect China. And so the Japanese army marched on. It invaded the huge city of Shanghai, killing thousands of civilians. Western leaders condemned the action. American Secretary of State Henry Stimson said the United States would not recognize Japanese control in these areas of China. But again, Hoover refused to consider any economic actions against the Japanese, and he strongly opposed taking any military action. The League of Nations also refused to recognize Japan's takeover. It called Japan the aggressor in Manchuria. Japan reacted simply. It withdrew from the League of Nations.
Most Americans were not happy about Japan's aggression, but they were not willing to fight force with force. This was less true, however, for Secretary of State Stimson. Stimson was a follower of the old ideas of President Theodore Roosevelt. He believed a nation could only have a strong foreign policy by being strong and using its military power in times of crisis. But Stimson's voice was in the minority. Most Americans did not believe Japan really threatened the security of the United States, and they were not ready to risk their lives to help people in China. Opinions changed only after Japanese planes attacked the American naval base at Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, in December of 1941.
The same story was true in Europe, but France was worried about the rising power of the Nazis in Germany and the fascists in Italy and Spain. France proposed the creation of an international army. Hoover opposed that idea. He called for all nations to reduce their weapons. He believed that negotiation, not force, was the way to solve the problem. But the new leaders in Germany and Japan would listen much more closely to the bootsteps of marching troops than to the high words of peace.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.